to be entitled Investigating Mechanisms of Resistance to Sclerotinia Homeocarpa Using Arabidopsis Thaliana as a Model by Renee Rio, Andrew Bent, James Kearns, University of Wisconsin, with Renee Rio presenting.
All right, thank you, and good morning, everyone. Over the next few minutes, I will be telling you about some of my recent research looking into Arabidopsis thaliana as a model for mechanisms of resistance and physical infection process of Sclerotinia homeocarpa, the dollar spot pathogen. Just wanted to start us off with a little bit of a background. I think everyone in this room is relatively familiar with dollar spot as a disease, so I wanted to focus primarily on control. For years, we have had highly effective chemical controls for dollar spot, and as a result, we have not done as much research into the biology of this pathogen. And so what you see here is a lifestyle of the pathogen, and this is kind of a best guess based on the information that we have. And what I'm going to focus on in this research is how the pathogen penetrates and establishes within host tissue as a way of better understanding this process so that we can have better controls based on pathogen biology and also based on breeding for more resistant cultivars. And this is particularly important because there are issues both with pathogen resistance to many commonly applied fungicide groups, and there are also increasingly strict regulations on many of the fungicides we use for dollar spot control. I also wanted to tell everyone a little bit about Arabidopsis because it may be something that's not as familiar. And Arabidopsis is a dicot weed that's found commonly throughout the world. It has a fully sequenced genome and was actually the first plant to have its genome fully sequenced. And also it has a small genome, which has made it very easy to use for some functional genomic studies and better understanding of plant genomics. Also, this is a very fast-growing organism, which helps in that you can grow it from seed to production of seed in about 2 months. And for my studies, I was focusing primarily on just the foliar tissue, and I could get the plant to the stage I wanted it in about 4 to 6 weeks. And then probably the primary reason why this is a wonderful tool for this research is the availability of tDNA mutant lines. Basically what this means is that for this plant, they've been able to use a bacterial transformation system to knock out many important genes. And for my research, I was looking at knockouts of genes in key defense pathways. The overall objectives of my research were, first of all, because as far as we knew, nobody had tried this before, to determine the ability of the pathogen to infect the model plant Arabidopsis. Secondly, to see if there was any effect on the ability of the plant to resist the pathogen using different defense mutants, and also to visually compare how the infection looked on the model host Arabidopsis versus a natural host, and for this part of my research, I used creeping bentgrass as the natural host. For my methods, Sclerotinia homeocarpa does not form a spore as far as we know, so I had to use a fragmented mycelial inoculum, and I used 5-day-old mycelia homogenized in 1/4-strength PDB in a commercial blender, and I sprayed this until droplet runoff on 6-week-old Arabidopsis plants at a concentration of 1 × 10⁴ mycelial fragments per milliliter. Also, I always use 1/4-strength PDB as my negative control for mock inoculation. And plants were covered to maintain high humidity and incubated in a growth chamber for 1 week, at which time I harvested the inoculated plants, and they went to 3 different applications. First of all, disease rating based on overall incidence of symptoms on the leaves. Secondly, a CTAB DNA extraction followed by semi-quantitative PCR for quantification of the fungal DNA present in infected tissue. And finally, a glacial acetic acid clearing and trypan blue staining technique for microscopy on both the natural host and model host tissues. For objective 1, I got an overwhelming yes. The pathogen is able to infect Arabidopsis. And some of the symptoms that we saw, this was the first trial. At this point, I was using a PDA plug to inoculate the plants with, and what you can see is kind of this necrotic lesion. And then we have the spray inoculated plants. Again, you can see these necrotic lesions, and also that the tissue here is collapsed and doesn't have the turgor pressure in the less symptomatic tissue. Another thing, I saw these melanized mats of mycelia on the surfaces of the Arabidopsis leaves, and also a darkening of the plant tissue underneath the trichomes. Here we just have the tissue stain showing that the Sclerotinia hyphae, which are characteristically very large compared to many other fungal hyphae, growing on the leaf surface. And this shows colonization of a trichome by the pathogen. In the second objective, these are the mutants that I used. If you look in the middle column, these are the exact mutants. This tells you the defense pathway or mechanism they're involved in. And over here, there's some relevance from other studies. And I just would like to point out the yellow is biotrophic resistance pathways, so pathways involved in resistance to pathogens that generally extract nutrients from living host tissue, whereas in the blue, you have necrotrophic defense pathways. And these would be pathogens that would kill off the host tissue and then extract the nutrients from that dead tissue. Here you have just a visual representation of what we saw. Down here, this is the Columbia wild type. All other mutants are in that genetic background, so the only difference is the gene of interest that was knocked out. And you can see on some of these leaves the dark spots, which represent lesions caused by the pathogen. And then going to a little bit more database, look at this. On the x-axis, we have disease incidence calculated as the number of symptomatic leaves divided by the total number of leaves per plant. And on the y-axis, we have our genotypes with the wild-type Columbia at the bottom. You have asterisks and p-values for mutants that were significantly different from the wild-type. So we have the SID and RAR mutants, which were both involved in biotrophic defense, are significantly more susceptible than the wild type. And this ethylene-insensitive mutant, involved in more of a necrotrophic type of defense, was actually significantly less susceptible compared to the wild type. And then to see if we could further back this up, I used a semi-quantitative PCR approach. So what I want you to focus on is the intensity of the bands in the middle. What we did was we normalized to the starting amount of plant tissue and then the starting amount of DNA and used Sclerotinia homeocarpa-specific primers to amplify and try to determine how much of the pathogen DNA was present in host tissue. Here you can see a positive control, straight homeocarpa, Sclerotinia homeocarpa DNA, and here we have an uninoculated wild-type plant where you can see no presence of that band. The most exciting thing here was that the ethylene-insensitive mutant, which we saw on the previous slide, was less susceptible to the pathogen than the wild type, also has the lowest amount of fungal DNA present. And then your SID and your RAR mutants from before are also higher than the inoculated. But what was interesting and not the same as the incidence data was that this DDE or jasmonic acid pathway mutant had a much higher pathogen DNA level than the wild type, which suggests that maybe the pathogen has an initial biotrophic phase, but then jasmonic acid maybe later on, which is why the pathogen is there, but we're not seeing the symptoms. And I would also like to point out that we did do this experiment 3 times with similar results. Finally, in the third objective, I compared how Sclerotinia homeocarpa infects the model host Arabidopsis versus the natural host creeping bentgrass. The staining technique used stains both fungal hyphae as well as dead plant tissue. And what we can see here is Arabidopsis, and we have the hypha growing through a stomate. Here we see the same thing. These hyphae are actually growing up out of the stomata. And here's one that's growing into it. I note there's a lack of any dead tissue around, which would kind of coincide with the possibility of having an initial biotrophic phase for this pathogen. Very similar. Again, no staining of dead tissue, but you can clearly see the hyphae growing up out of the stomata. And here we have creeping bentgrass, and you can see similar behavior by the pathogen. It's growing within host tissue, but then we can see it growing up out of the host tissue as well. And a different thing that we saw was here in Arabidopsis, the pathogen growing around the perimeter of host cells. And in creeping bentgrass, the pathogen growing along the perimeter of the host cells and also down into the creeping bentgrass tissue. So it was good to see that we saw some similar physical processes going on, which would kind of confirm Arabidopsis is a good model for this particular pathogen. Some conclusions from the research that I did. First of all, Sclerotinia homeocarpa is able to infect Arabidopsis. Also, my experiments did show that different pathway mutants for the defense pathways could be involved in defense, and particularly ethylene insensitivity may help the plant to fight off the pathogen, and also that some biotrophic pathways such as salicylic acid may be involved. Also, we see that leaves of Arabidopsis thaliana provide a good model for visualizing the Sclerotinia homeocarpa infection process. And then because this is a turf grass session and I've talked a lot about more basic molecular work, I wanted to bring this back to some applications to the field. First of all, novel chemical approaches, possibly based on what we've seen with the ethylene and salicylic acid, trying exogenous applications and seeing if those help to control disease. Also, if we're going to go into the natural hosts, which we have less genetic information on, we can have more targeted hypotheses and look at more specific genes and pathways than going with a global approach with no prior information. And also, probably most importantly, we can use this for accelerated improvement of turfgrass cultivars, either through traditional breeding of genes of interest or also through genetic engineering approaches. And with that, I would just like to acknowledge my advisor, and in particular, my undergraduate, Jeanette Schultz, funding by the John and Flora Burby Wisconsin Distinguished Graduate Fellowship. And I'd be happy to take any questions if there's time. Yes?
Knowing what you found out so far about these mutants and the pathways of potential resistance, is there anything that you can see looking at the genome
Okay, so I guess the question is there any redundancy in turfgrass genes that we may be able to utilize? And as of right now, we don't have any sequenced turfgrass species, but we do have monocots that do have sequenced genomes such as rice, barley, wheat, and there are definitely orthologous genes in those monocots. Yeah, and I think in general Sclerotinia is believed to have a little bit of a biotrophic phase at the beginning, and then later on you see less of that.
Have you thought about employing Sclerotinia to see if you get similar behavior or results in your
monkeys? The question was, have I thought about using Sclerotinia Sclerotinia in these studies? You know, I have not, but that could be an interesting pathway to look into. Yes. So the question was, did I notice any penetration structures or did the pathogen come through natural openings? In the Arabidopsis, it did seem like I was having some thickening of the hyphae over a site of penetration, but I wouldn't say like an apersorium type structure. I did notice right here, it looks like the pathogen has produced some kind of a penetration peg or something of that nature to infiltrate the creeping bentgrass cell. Yes? So the question was, did sclerotia form on dead plants? And actually, in my studies, I didn't see any plants die. I could see lesions, but overall, the plants, they did okay.
We're going to have to hold any further questions for now, and please thank our speakers.